Hello.
Paul, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Fantastic. Fantastic, my man. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, you in a good position?
Yep.
Yeah, you comfortable?
Yep.
And we shouldn't be talking about?
We can talk about everything other than...
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon. Well, it's not just any other Friday afternoon. This is the last Friday of 2017 for us to have a sideshow. Last week, I should add, was the festive soiree. And the next time you shall see me possibly out and about will be for the perennial Gardeners Royal Benevolent Society January get-together ball. You can find out more information on this and anything else that comes up in the show at sideshow.com, facebook.com/thesideshow. We're also at Sideshow on Twitter. And if you feel the love and the need to do so, feel free to head to that iTunes provider or other and leave a rate and review. Now, one of the shows that we have not come up even near close to mentioning at all, for no apparent reason, has been the Royal Horticultural Society's Amal Verne Show. And no stranger to the Sideshow is a gentleman by the name of Paul Hervey Brooks, and unknown to me, well, slightly known that he had an involvement, was Paul's shop, who is going to be at RHS Amal Verne. So to find out a little bit more about that, Paul Hervey Brooks, welcome to the Sideshow. Thanks for coming back on, man.
Hello.
Yeah, you're quite talkative today, Paul. Are you having a busy Friday? Is Christmas mayhem?
Yeah, it's a busy, always with the kind of shops element of what I do. This is a fairly busy time, mainly because we're making lots of Christmas decorations for different people who want door welcomes or mantelpieces or even larger things that they don't really either have the time, patience or energy to do for themselves.
I know, just for those of you who are saying this to me, Paul is, and it has been announced, that he is going to do Chelsea 2018, and he's going to come back on at the start of the year to tell us a little bit more about that in detail. It deserves a show all by itself. Sticking with Christmas festive decorations, let's call them that, I gather you're not, how do I differentiate what I might buy next to a Christmas tree at the side of the road? You're a very smart fella. You dress better than I do. Your hair's immaculately brushed. I tried to grow a beard. I looked like somebody who was from, well, Ireland, essentially. But you didn't. You looked quite the gentleman with a beard on.
Ah, thank you. Well, I try. it doesn't always work. But the Allomorphic, which is the shop, it was never really my idea to get into it. But it's... It's supposed to be. The thing which is important to me is that gardens, landscapes, green spaces, they inspire you. So there is no difference that really the town I live in doesn't have anything that kind of celebrates that kind of outside space. So I thought, well, I didn't. But in combination, I thought this would be a great window to talk about those values. So our Christmas offering is very much kind of bespoke, but not massively expensive, but a bespoke alternative to the kind of dusted in glitter. It's much more about foliage and flowers that are out at winter, berries and fruits, and really nicely made decorations by local artists and craftspeople.
Okay, and I'm not trying to make you overly big-headed here, Paul, but I'm on the verge of, because there's no other way around it. Bearing in mind you were the go-to guy for the young designers at RHS Tatton. You were the advisor there, and we had Anka Panate on the show, and it's a really good episode, and she speaks so highly of you. You would have done Chatsworth in the episode we did mid or early 2016-17, my apologies, and you also did Hampton Court, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now you're on the verge of heading to Chelsea, so my... Not my Christmas wreath, but my younger brother's or my older brother's Christmas wreath going to be something like I might have made when I was 7. And yours is something that might win the Eurovision, just to differentiate between the two of them. I jest in saying that, but you're a bit of a stylish kind of a guy.
Very kind.
How does your mind go from doing show gardens, which is, as all former guests of the show would agree, and in particular the interview I did with Walcott and Smith, it's a bit of a pressure cooker, and all of a sudden now you're in a shop in somewhere shire, as Dylan Moran would call it, which you own, and you're doing these, as you described them, decorative festive pieces. Are you able to slow that down to do that level?
Yeah, because, I mean, maybe controversially, maybe just how I view life now, which is very different to 2 or 3 years ago. My thing is, you can make a show garden, and I say this to young designers, you can make this as pressurized as you want. You can make it the most unpleasant experience that you want. You can kind of put the weight of the world on your shoulders and say, if I don't get this right, it's a disaster. Funnily enough, if on the day you don't get, let's say, a gold medal because you really wanted one, the next day you're still going to be alive. It's not over. So I try to remind young designers, as I tell myself, doing things like show gardens is a choice. I want to do it because I enjoy it. If I stop enjoying it, stop doing it. But the pressure has to be an enjoyable pressure, and it shouldn't be one that you then moan about afterwards, because it's a huge privilege and honour to do it. So I kind of see it as a separate thing. The bit that transfers between the two is finding inspiration in the small-scale beauty. So three plants together could look gorgeous at Chelsea, but also somebody I would like to walk past and look at them and think, do you know what, I could do that at home and I'd be really happy. Same with these Christmas decorations. I'd kind of like someone to think, oh, those little Australian woody shrub that he's used in this, you know, looks really beautiful, and it gives pleasure. So it's the kind of pleasure and the interest in making life enjoyable, which is the bit which is important.
I have to say, Paul, I would 110% agree with that. I'm often asked, and this isn't to sell Donegan Landscaping in any way, but then the Sideshow has no sponsor, so I may as well. But I mean, to be quite fair about it, I'm regularly asked, what size of gardens do I do, or do I build, or do I design in Dublin? And I always say, look, so long as I'm in a garden, I'm relatively happy and quite content, bearing in mind I used to bring my plants to school in my school bag to see if they would photosynthesize or lean towards the light during that 45-minute semester. It's a childlike thing that I guess has never left me. Let's get into this shop, Paul. How and where did that start, and what's the history behind it?
It came about because one of the things I used to find is things like shows are absorbing. And I like time kind of in my own little world. And I increasingly found myself in my own little world. And so we had a conversation, Yam and I, what should we do? And he said, you know, I would never let somebody into my own garden, you know, and kind of open it to the public and blow my own whistle. It's just not what I'd want to do because it's really personal to me. So he said, well, what we need is a shop that kind of shows our values in a way that we're happy to do it. And that's how it started. And now there are three of them. I wish almost every day that he could see where his idea has gone. But it has its own life. And now I find more than just kind of sharing what were our values when we started it, it actually kind of feeds my interest in all sorts of things that I would never have thought about before. But it still kind of says, these are the kind of things that I find beautiful and interesting. And it all comes back to the garden. And the great thing about it is that now it's in a position where different makers and craftspeople, we commission them to make things for us. And I just love the kind of symmetry of that arrangement.
Well, let me take this another angle then, Paul. You don't seem to be the average inverted commas garden centre. Is that a fair suggestion?
Yes. Yeah. We're not buying cheap and sell it at a high margin. We're much more interested in how has it been made? Who's made it? Is it good value for what you're getting, and is it inspiring? And will you look at it for 10, 20 years and think, you know, I'm really glad I bought that? Because that's what it should be about. We live on, whether we like it or not, a planet which has a finite number of resources. So that has to be a consideration. And I think one of the biggest challenges for anyone interested or working in the kind of landscape sector is that actually these resources are very finite, and we have, whether we like it or not, abused them up until now. So you know, wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we have some responsibility to think about what will happen 50 years from now.
Bearing in mind, there are people in Salt Lake City, there are people in East Anglia where Barbara Segal is, another inverted commas former guest of the show. There are people in Dublin who are listening to this saying, yeah, okay, I hear you, Peter. It is a little bit different, but how? So let's take this one then. Give me five examples of something that is for sale in the shop or that I can buy there that might differentiate you from, let's say, somebody else.
Okay, I have five things. So we have a range of like skincare products that we carefully have made by a local producer. She goes out with a special license to gather washed up sea kelp and turns it into moisturizer, hand soap, shampoo, and we have that all packaged in recyclable packaging. And then we say, it's not enough that you're going to recycle it, you need to bring it back to us, and if you bring it back to us, we'll buy the packaging back off of you. So that's one thing that we do. All of our cards, gift wrap, are all made by an artisan couple, and they're all designs that we've worked on together, so that it celebrates their work as an artist and where we see ourselves as a retailer, if you like. So I think that's quite unique. Christmas stuff is all bespoke. It's all made through the year by different local makers. So, you know, no two pieces are really ever identical. So you're kind of buying a piece of artwork in miniature. Most of our plants and our cut flowers come from not just UK growers, because I think that's a really easy cop-out, if you like. But we have people who will come in because they know that to us it's really important where things come from. And they'll say, so I'm going to say, I had an amazing crop of Rebecca in my cutting garden, and we'll buy them off of them. So that it's more than saying it's a nursery. It's much more about who's doing it, why they're doing it, and how it fits in with us. And I really don't think there are many other businesses who build a model around that kind of ethos. I'm not sure if that was five things either. Sorry.
I think that was four, Paul, but you can give me one more if you have one off the top of your head. As is usual, Sideshow style, as you're well aware, at this stage, I don't really plan anything at all, which makes research really easy.
Okay. I guess the other thing which I quite like, we have carry bags which you can use. They're made out of Hessian. With tape. So, I mean, three designs that we came up with ourselves, and we sell them in very limited numbers because it's kind of like the old piecemeal arrangement where somebody makes work, brings it back, and you buy it. So with this couple, we do that as well. But we kind of came up with the design in collaboration, and then we buy them back at a price which is fair to the person who's making them.
Could I call it boutique, Paul?
I like it's a shop. It doesn't need, in my mind, and I know I'm sounding a little bit precious about it, it doesn't need a flash title. It in one way, it doesn't bother me if people don't realise that's the extent we go to, because I don't see it as a sales benefit or a way of selling what we're doing. It's just, that's what's important to us, and it's a shop that sells nice things. That's kind of how I like to see it.
Can I ask you, Paul, when yourself and Jan sat down, and I gather, you know, you've a good business head about you, I would gather that Jan was quite similar as well, or would have had to have been in order to say, let's go out and buy or rent and pay rent and rates and employ people and pay staff and pay taxes. I gather there's a decent business head, or would have been, between the two of you. It's not, wouldn't it be great to own a cafe and then 4 months later it closes down? And you've obviously done something extremely right, because there's three of them on the go. And again, I'll go back and say it, you're a pretty smart cookie. I have respect for you because of that, and you wouldn't be on the Sod Show otherwise, to be quite frank about it. But when you sat down and did that pie chart, that bubble thing of ideas of what we wanted to be, has it differentiated between? Has it stuck to its guns? What was that couple of words that you wrote down at the very, very start on that blank sheet of paper?
I think the starting block, Jan's words were, it has to be a physical place that somebody can walk in and they will see our values. our idea has always been, if what we're about isn't commercially viable, then we will stop. Not, we'll modify to suit the market, because in this kind of world, in garden design and in the kind of retail that we wanted to do, it has to be about your own values, or you shouldn't do, because it's driven by a passion and a belief. So I think that core thing is still there, and we always have the tagline "Inspired by the Garden," which we still use. I think the biggest change is that from purely being about plants, handmade pots, seeds, that kind of thing, that we have now got a whole element that's kind of inspired by the garden, but it's indoors. So it's like these beauty products, it is things like table lamps. But Jan and I never had that conversation, but it was part of the natural evolution. And I think he would look at it and understand why we had gone in that direction, and see that the core value was still imprinted on everything that we're doing.
And without getting too much into this, this isn't something that I've not really planned this, but when I'm doodling gardens, my mom, who had no knowledge of horticulture whatsoever, and I could hear mom wording in my ear, almost talking in the back of my head, which sounds a little bit funny. It made me take something out of a garden on paper, and which in hindsight was the right thing to do. Wouldn't surprise me about mom. You could hear those voices in your head when she was around. Do you get those, Paul? And does that happen when you're making a decision as regards, I know it is a business, but at the same token, it's also something from the heart, as per what I do for a living, which is obviously not the sideshow. Does that make sense with you?
Yeah, of course. And yes, it does. Quite often, we kind of call it a gut reaction, that I think, like sometimes I'll think about something, I think, God, he'd hate that. He would absolutely, or he'd, I think, oh, he'd love this. And then I know that it's right. But I also know that, and I said it before when you invited me on before, one of the things which is really important to me, and I it's not a flippant statement, but all of the things I do, I only want to do them as long as they're enjoyable. And they're not the most important thing in the world. And I think, when I see people getting really stressed out over the kind of career which is driven by choice, and they're not enjoying it, and I think then stop, because actually, you know, and I don't want it to sound melodramatic, but it's based in experience of these last few years. Actually, we've only got so much time. It's the only valuable thing we've got. So if you're not enjoying it and it's not working, stop. No one is making you do it. So I often think about that when I'm kind of facing decisions, even, and we'll talk about it in the future, even deciding about going back to Chelsea or doing things like being involved at Malvern this coming year. I think to myself, do I want to do it? Not, oh, I have to do it. Because the minute you think, oh, I have to do this, it's the wrong way to do it, and you won't find it fulfilling.
There's a mountain of things popping through my head, and goes a little bit sometimes like that little heartbeat monitor, and you get those little blippets, and each one of those tends to be an idea. And the one that has just popped into my head was the Andy Kaufman story about how he brought the entire of one of his gigs out for milk and cookies afterwards. And the financial question is, why would anybody do that? As sure as I turned down metal for a show garden before, made no sense at all to anybody else, but it made me smile. And in my head, I do have to agree with Paul, and I've always said it from day one. The day standing in a garden in Ireland, knowing what the weather would have been when I was 17 years of age, when I first went to horticultural college, the day that starts to get in your nerves is the day you put the tools in the back of the Jeep, you slam the door shut, you drive it home, and you throw the keys in the ditch, and good luck to you. Paul, let's skew sideways for a little bit. For those who have never been before, what is RHS Malvern? We know the RHS is Royal Horticultural Society, but as a show, how does it differ, let's say, from Chelsea, Hampton, Tatton?
Okay, well, it is a very different thing. It's very special. So it's a collaboration. It's the only collaboration the RHS have ever done. So the Royal Horticultural Society provide some guidance on the content, and they provide the kind of judging criteria and the judges and all of that procedure. But it's very firmly a show which is predominantly organized by the Malvern Three Counties Agricultural Society. And so it's referred to as Malvern Spring Festival. And basically, it's one of the largest shows, which surprises people. It has the biggest floral marquee out of all of the shows, with plants for sale, which is kind of key to gardeners. It has an amazing range of show gardens. It's a great place if you're a first-time designer and you're not sure whether you really want to do shows. It's a great place to do it, incredibly supportive. It doesn't have the kind of self-imposed pressure or the kind of media anxiety of Chelsea, but it has international show gardens. So there's a relationship with the Moscow Flower Show, and designers come and make gardens there. It's a really big show. It also has the largest, outside of Blackpool, the largest contingent of National Association of Flower Arranging Societies demonstrations anywhere. So huge flower arrangements. So, I mean, it really is very different to other shows. And it's very dear to me because it was the first place I ever made a garden, admittedly very terribly, very, very bad. But it was a great place to learn how not to do it.
Is that not always the case, though, Paul, when you look back and you see the difference between Love Me Do and Sgt. Pepper's and you say, holy mother of divine, this is just, you know, one is essentially three chords on a bit of a harmonica and the other one is an entire story morphing out of God knows.
Yeah, I think so. And you can't have one without the other. Which is the other really important bit of that. You know, most of the things that I've learned that have been useful have come from things which didn't always go quite to plan. Malvern is a really good place to do all of that because there are established local designers. There's the odd kind of, if you like, I hate this phrase, but inverted commas, name there. And there's lots of people with really original thinking. And dare I say it, and I'll probably get into trouble, every now and then you see an idea there from an unknown first-time designer, which is really intriguing, maybe a little bit rough around the edges. And then the following year or the year later, you see it as a refined idea from a different designer's hand, with a bit more of a profile and a bit more of a name at a different show. So it's quite interesting.
Whereabouts is it based, Paul, for those, again, who are not living in the UK? What's the nearest airport, for example?
Birmingham. So Birmingham International, it's kind of the pinch point between Gloucestershire, Worcestershire and Herefordshire, which makes the three counties, easily accessible on the mainline train to Worcester, Birmingham, London. So it has a surprisingly large audience, about 98 to 120,000 visitors over 5 days.
Wow, that is impressive. That's really impressive. Let's get into this one then. You, with all of your style, with the beard, Paul, which are, do I call it haute couture? I'm not too sure with an Irish accent, if I've even said that correctly. But we'll run with it anyway. We're gone all Parisian now. You see what I've done there? What is Allomorphic doing at RHS Malvern this year? And are you directly involved with that?
Yes, I am. It's the easiest part of that. So we had an idea to me, there was a logic that Malvern was the first place I ever made a garden. So when we thought it would be great for Allomorphic to kind of do something at the shows somehow, I thought Malvern is the place because in my head that I owe that loyalty to it. So I went to them and I said, what we'd really like to do is bring a double-decker bus with a canvas marquee, and we're going to fit this bus out so that on the ground floor we've got beautiful plants, pots, all the kind of things that we sell for sale, and, you know, kind of offering that inspiration. But upstairs in the bus, what I really want to do is offer people an opportunity to sit down, look over the show gardens and have really, really beautiful thought through breakfasts and really lovely lunches, which, you know, the shows sometimes can be a little bit dicey, to say the least. So I want people to sit down and have nice food that kind of feels wholesome, feels good, feels a bit naughty sometimes, but, you know, the ingredients are really nice. And afternoon tea, because there's no reason not ever to have that. So that was the idea, which we took to them, which they really loved. So now we're working on refining what that menu actually looks like. and fitting out a bus, which is quite exciting.
How many people are involved in that, Paul? You know, I know there's three stores there, so they've obviously got to be manned while the bus is in Malvern itself. And as a curiosity, as a by the way, when does Malvern take place?
So Malvern is roughly 2 to 3 weeks before Chelsea. It's the beginning of May, normally around the 9th to 12th of May. That's it. That's its normal home. But if you type in Malvern Spring Festival into, you know, like into the internet, it comes up pretty easily to confirm. But yeah, so basically, I feel very lucky that I have a lot of people I call on who give me their time for show gardens, all sorts of things. So our main bulk of our kind of shop staff, if you like, and I don't like to think of them like that because it's like a little family to me. So the people that work in the shops, we said to them, do you want to come and do Malvern or do you want to stay here? Which do you prefer to do? Which do you find more interesting? And then we're supplementing that with our little army of what are jokingly called my ladies and different people who kind of do different bits who want to do it. So at Malvern particularly, one of my longest standing friends, who is a lady who's about 70-something now, with the most amazing plant knowledge. She is going to come every day to talk to people about plants. And in one way, I kind of don't care if she doesn't sell a thing. What I do care about is that someone will talk to her about a plant and they'll go away and they'll feel really happy. And that's kind of the most important bit of it to me.
Let me put it to you this way. For those of you who are on the road, if you're walking, if you're driving, if you're doing that morning commute or that late home commute towards the end of December, that little bit of Christmas shopping, and this is the little bit of, how would you say, sunrise on a dark December evening day for you, or morning, at Sudshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSudshow and Sudshow.com. All the show notes will be there. We'll have a lovely picture of Paul, hopefully standing outside his shop, so you'll know exactly what it looks like, and we'll put you directly in touch with them. If you're looking for tickets for Malvern, head to Sudshow.com, just stick in Malvern, MALVERN, and we'll have all of the information for you up there. Paul, will I see you at the perennial party in January?
I'm afraid you won't, sorry. No. Much as I would normally go, I won't be here, so I won't be going.
Okay. The last time I saw you, you were surrounded by a gaggle of women.
Yeah.
I was quite jealous because I was surrounded by a gaggle of fellas and none of them were very good looking, Paul.
Well, I was going to say we could have swapped, but on that basis, maybe not.
Ah, good Lord. Paul Hervey Brooks, thank you so much for coming on the show. Continued success, and have a great Christmas and a fantastic new year, my good man. It's a pleasure, as always, to talk to you.
Thank you. You too.
And for you listening at home, if you are sitting down, you're having the mince pies, you're having the turkey, the mother-in-law has just set the kitchen on fire because she decided she's going to make her famous stew, and the sprouts have gone a little bit a different colour, let's call it that. Don't worry, we're missing next week, but we're back the first Friday of January. Have a great festive period in the great outdoors. We look forward to talking to you in the new year. Thank you so much for listening over the last 12 months. At Sudshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSudshow and Sudshow.com. Take care of, safe home, God bless, bye bye.
What are you going to say?
In South Africa, there is a really, really, really tall giraffe, and his name is Mary. He is 5 million feet tall. His legs are taller than the tallest trees in South Africa. There's actually two. One tree is called Michael, and the other is called James. They had a sister, but she ran away because she wasn't tall enough. And on the very top of that tree, there's a little parrot. And he runs a sweet shop, especially for giraffes. I love you more than the tallest of all of them stacked on top of each other in South Africa, which is actually as high as the sun. But that's only during daytime. So your one is Santi, which is Nanny and the Moon and where else?
Santa.
Nanny and the Moon and Santa, yeah. Okay, so mine is like a daytime one, except it involves a giraffe and a parrot and two trees.
Mine is nighttime.
That is just
and daytime.
How is yours daytime?
Like nanny.
I never thought about it like that. Yeah. Whose go is it now?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, how about I love you?
I love you.
Okay, good night.
Good
night. Okay.
Good.
Sleep tight.
Take down this bum bum boy.
Okay. Okay, bye 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 bye
bye.
Bye bye bye.